This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. While much of the country stifled a collective yawn at the 2018 NBA Finals matchup, same as the 2017 NBA Finals matchup, same as the 2016 and 2015 NBA Finals matchups, actor Jesse Eisenberg has been looking back at another NBA Finals matchup and a story that might have been. Here's Jesse.
The 1992-93 NBA season was a tour de force for the Phoenix Suns. They won a franchise record 62 games, they clinched first place in the competitive Western Conference, and they boasted the league's MVP, the round mound of rebound, Sir Charles Barkley.
Barkley, 20-footer, yes, Charles Barkley!
The world was shocked, then, when the Chicago Bulls upended this dream team in the final seconds of Game 6 of the 1993 NBA Finals. Suns fans around the world watched the final 14 seconds of this game like it was the Zapruder film, parsing each moment, wondering what went wrong.
The Suns by two. It has come down to this possession.
The Chicago Bulls, down by two, ran a play called the Blind Pig, where every player touched the ball. And with 4 seconds left, it wound up in the hands of John Paxson, a largely unheralded marksman whose life was about to change.
Here's Paxson for three!
The Suns looked amateurish by comparison, flummoxed as the ball changed hands. Charles Barkley frantically chased B.J. Armstrong. Suns point guard and future mayor of Sacramento, Kevin Johnson, collapsed on the floor. And my favorite player, Thunder Dan Majerle, a two-time all-defensive player, raised his hands helplessly under the basket 20 feet from the man with the ball, as if to signal a surrender. So what happened? Where did John Paxson's surge of confidence come from? And how did Dan Majerle, a defensive master, so helplessly lose focus? It was me. I am responsible. Yes, I am the reason the Phoenix Suns lost the NBA Finals that year. It was 1993. I was in fourth grade, living in the middle of New Jersey. And my life was pretty boring. I had the same number of friends as I had enemies, one. And both my friend and my enemy were not such good versions of either one. That is, my friend, Teddy, was not such a good friend, and my enemy, Steven, was not such a vicious rival. Teddy was a kind of friend by default. I didn't have much interest in other kids, and Teddy was kind of a doormat, so we hung out almost reluctantly, both just trying to get through the day.
No one wants to sit with me.
No one wants to sit with me either.
Should we sit together?
I don't care. And Steven, my enemy, was only my enemy in the way Hitler was the enemy of Norway. He was a brute, and I was just a tiny country in his way. He would taunt me and Teddy by throwing mulch at our heads.
Look at you losers, whose names I'm not gonna learn just sitting at the table together. If you were a real threat, I'd probably beat you up. But since you're insignificant, I'm just gonna throw mulch at your head.
Ow!
Now I understand how Hitler must have felt about Norway.
I was distraught. I mean, I had never been bullied before, and though Teddy didn't seem to mind the abuse, I knew that I needed to take action to get back at Steven. So I decided to write a letter to my favorite basketball player, Thunder Dan Majerle, asking him for help. And though I was only 9 years old, this fan letter would change the course of history. Dear Mr. Majerle, I am a big fan of you. You're my favorite player. And I know that one day we will both be playing as teammates on the Phoenix Suns. I know how to draw the logo, and I'm a great dribbler. But I am really in trouble right now, and you're the only one who could help me. There's a kid named Steven at school, and every day he throws mulch at my head, and also at my friend Teddy's head. It doesn't usually hurt, but sometimes it does. I thought that if you could come to the school, just at the end of the day, when I'm waiting for the bus, you don't have to come for the whole day, and pretend like we're best friends, and then when Steven throws mulch, you can be like, hey, don't throw mulch at my best friend Jesse and his friend Teddy. And then Steven will be so scared, especially because you're 6'6" and 222 pounds and score 13.9 points per game, that he will stop throwing mulch at my head, and then maybe he'll also think I was cool for having a friend like you, Dan Majerle, who is also my favorite basketball player. And then Steven and I will become friends, and I can finally stop hanging out with Teddy after school. From your number one fan, Jesse Eisenberg from New Jersey. Now, of course, on the surface, the letter seems totally innocuous. But in retrospect, it's easy to see how its recipient would have reacted. In fact, I've imagined the scene in the locker room when Dan Marley gets my letter. It's the day of the fateful Game 6 of the NBA Finals. And Sir Charles Barkley is suiting up when he hears Dan Marley in a rage.
Dan Marley, what's wrong? Are you okay?
No, Charles Barkley, I'm not okay. I'm furious.
Why? What happened?
This kid, Jesse Eisenberg from New Jersey, asked me to come visit him.
Well, no, that's just crazy. Doesn't he know we're in the finals?
Apparently, he doesn't even care.
What? That's a knucklehead. Now I'm enraged, too.
And take a guess why he wants me to come visit him.
Did he get into a car accident?
Nope.
Is he in a wheelchair?
Nope.
Well, I can't think of any other possible reason he'd ask you to leave during the most important game of your life.
He wanted me to come visit him so I could defend him from some douchebag named Steven who's throwing mulch at his head.
What? Well, why doesn't he just ask this Steven to stop throwing mulch at his head?
Right?
What is wrong with this world? I'm furious.
And he didn't even ask me how I'm doing. Or offer to fly me out to New Jersey so that I can save his life.
Oh, I hate this knucklehead Jesse. I can't think straight. Now, how am I going to play great basketball today?
What if I need to play defense during an important play? I am paralyzed with rage because of Jesse from New Jersey.
As am I. Yes, this letter from Jesse all but assures us of a terrible Game 6 in the NBA Finals tonight.
It's impossible to see that working out any other way. And then, of course, I imagine the opposing team's locker room, where Chicago Bulls shooting guard John Paxson has just finished reading a different fan letter.
Oh, isn't this nice?
Isn't what nice?
Oh, hey, Michael Jordan.
Hey, John Paxson. What are you reading?
I was just reading this fan letter from a kid who broke both his legs in a car accident.
Oh, wow. What's it say?
It says, "Dear Mr. Paxson, I'm currently in a wheelchair, and I will probably not be able to walk for a very long time, but I just wanted to wish you good luck in the NBA Finals. From Jeremy, age 9.
That is a nice letter.
Yes. This is how all fan letters should be written.
Yes, I agree. And because of this child, I feel ready to play at my best.
This child and his sensible note will allow us to win Game 6 of the NBA Finals against the Phoenix Suns.
Ha ha, yes it will.
Yeah.
And of course, they did win Game 6 of the NBA Finals against the Phoenix Suns. John Paxson, bolstered by Jeremy's selflessness, would make his game-winning three-pointer with 4 seconds left.
Here's Paxson for three! Yes!
And the Phoenix Suns, with their innocence punctured by my solipsistic note, would collapse. And as of right now, because of me, they have the worst record in the entire league. The tragic fallout from my letter was not confined to the Suns. You see, Michael Jordan, buoyed by Jeremy's life-affirming fan letter and John Paxson's shot, would win his third straight NBA championship and decide to leave basketball. But worse than Jordan's departure from basketball was his really odd and questionable decision to play baseball. This move tarnished not just Jordan's athletic mystique, but also the sport of baseball, which is America's pastime. So therefore, by natural extension, Jordan's departure from basketball tarnished America, a country that in the immediate aftermath of the Cold War was at its unparalleled height. So is it possible that America, weakened by Michael Jordan's hubris, which stemmed directly from my crippling fan letter, led to our failed intervention in Somalia? Did the sour mood linger for 2 years, driving President Bill Clinton to act out sexually as a desperate bomb to counteract America's diminished prestige? Have we ever truly scrutinized the housing crisis of 2007 as an inevitable outgrowth of a wave of societal risk-taking brought about by Michael Jordan's own risk-taking, his overestimation of his abilities as a baseball player? Is it possible that all of these American tragedies stem directly from my fan letter? Yes, it is possible. And yes, it is likely. After the Suns lost, I moved on from basketball, developing an interest in obscure musical theater where the damage I could inflict would have fewer consequences. The last I saw of my former hero was about a decade ago. My sister and I were watching TV when Thunder Dan Marley showed up, shirtless, in a commercial for deodorant.
I love to sweat.
My sister accused me of being in love with him because I liked him and he wasn't wearing a shirt. I wanted to tell her that I wasn't in love with him, I just liked basketball. But I didn't say anything. I didn't fight back. Because, in a way, this is who I've become. My letter and the subsequent fallout has turned me into a passive eunuch, too scared to ever fight back. I will sulk through life, getting hit in the head by the proverbial mulch. My letter altered history exclusively for the worse, and so I've put down my pen. If history is written by the winners, I'd rather be a loser.
That's actor Jesse Eisenberg. His story was produced by Jonathan Mitchell, and it comes to us from the Slate podcast Upon Further Review. It was written by Eisenberg for Mike Pesca's new book, which is called Upon Further Review. Days after the podcast dropped, a sports radio station in Arizona asked Dan Marley who he blamed for that son's loss. His answer was unequivocal. Danny Ainge, the current GM of the Boston Celtics. That sets the stage for the summit of sorts between Jesse Eisenberg and Dan Marley on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Jesse, I'm sorry, man. If I would have just answered your letter or, you know, sent myself in New Jersey, maybe you could have been the next great point guard for the Phoenix Suns. Instead, you had to get into this acting gig. So I apologize for that. I feel terrible.
I also have to apologize because after I heard your defense of the play in question, I looked at it again on YouTube and I realized it was Danny Ainge's fault. I should be going to Boston now with my torch, and I made a big mistake.
And there you have it, folks. If only every disagreement could be resolved so easily.